Thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call now with your tax questions at 252-222-4848.
And we'd like to welcome Andrew Foster to Life and Taxes. Good morning, tax man.
Good morning, Mike.
And I guess it is a big day if you're a golf aficionado. You can watch the British Open because they're teeing off as we speak here. And it's also a big day for parents with children who get a tax credit. Bank accounts are going to get hit today with some money.
That's exactly right. We talked about it last week. Yeah. The advanced child tax credit, which will be paid $300 per month.
Per kid.
Under six. $200 for kids that are 6 to 17.
Mm-hmm.
So each kid counts, basically, is the best way to look at it. And for the next 6 months, you'll receive the amount of kids you have times the amount of money that I just stated.
Yeah.
And you'll get that directly deposited into your bank account, assuming that you have filed your 19 or 20 returns and that there's nothing else you have to do.
But there's an income threshold, is there not?
Correct. Income threshold, $150,000 for married filing jointly when it starts phasing out, $75,000 for individual taxpayers.
So a lot of people are going to see that. A lot of people are going to see that. And it's a way the government, that's a kind of a stimulus in a sort, in a way, to get money in people's hands now rather than wait for their filing
time
next
year. That was the way that the legislation was framed, was typically you claim the child tax credit. Historically, it's been $2,000. This one is $3,600 and $3,000. So a little bit different there. But they wanted to get the money in your bank account so you can use it. We did talk last week about the pitfalls of that, though. If your situation or circumstances does change, i.e. you make more income this particular year,
yeah,
or if your child happens to not be eligible, we went through some scenarios last week how that might be the case. Just be careful because they will do a reconciliation.
Clawback.
And again, that comes with penalties. That comes with interest. So there's a way to opt out.
I bet the
go online if you choose to opt out and do not want the advanced child tax credit.
Just take it when you normally get it.
There's a portal online that you can go through IRS.gov that will allow you to do that. So certainly that's an option for our listeners out there. Most people, you're fine taking the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take it. Save it or spend it as you need.
Is that money that is it tax free? The $300, or is that you don't have to claim that next year when you do tax? That's free.
No, you don't claim it. You just do that reconciliation, like I said. So normally it would be that you get it in one lump sum come when you file your tax return,
sure,
February through April of next year. This is just a way to get money in people's pockets sooner. So it's just again an advanced credit. Mm-hmm. That you're receiving relative to your taxes.
I bet you. I mean, people that listen to our show know this, but for some of the unwashed out there, I bet that's going to come as a pleasant surprise. Like,
definitely.
What's this money cabinet?
Well, Lockwood was sitting in your chair last week, and he said he had no idea. You know, he was news to him.
Yeah. I saw him online trying to adopt several children last week, but I said, that's not allowable. You can't do that way.
We can do some adult adoptions. They're not going to qualify for the child tax credit, though.
don't try to do that. No, that's interesting. And today's the day that the first hit that takes place today.
Yeah.
So very cool.
One of the interesting things has happened this week, and we talked about last week how we like to be on the cutting edge of this program and like to keep our listeners up to date with legislation that just passed. We have a bill that just got through the North Carolina General Assembly and hit Governor Cooper's desk, and this one got signed. There was no veto on this particular one, and it involves some changes to our will statutes, which is interesting. So there's three different wills under North Carolina general statutes. And we'll start with kind of the easiest one, which is what we call a non-compatible will. So a non-compatible will is a oral will. So this is a situation in which an individual must be on their deathbed. And if they orally state that they want X to go to Mike, I want my ring to go to Mike, and there's witnesses around, and they can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
It can only be for personal property, can't be for real property, can only be for personal property. And the individual dies from that illness. So they have to end up eventually passing, but due to the illness that they have,
mm-hmm,
not they can't get better and then die 6 months later. It can't happen like that. It has to be in that order. Then they will allow that will to potentially be probated through testimony relative to what the witnesses say. That is called a non-competitive will. It's kind of an interesting one. Luckily, we don't have to deal with that. I haven't had to deal with it yet at Harvell and Collins, period, but that is out there that could be an issue. The other will is what's called a written attested will. So this is the will that you get if you come into our office, Mike. This is the will where we, you know, have an individual sign in the presence of two witnesses and a notary, and you have your wishes typed out on a page. You sign the dotted line, witnesses sign, notary stamps it, that all the signatures there. It's called self-proved. We had the language in there making it self-proved, which means that upon your death, we don't have to go track down a bunch of witnesses. Those statements in the will itself are good enough to allow that will to be probated. And whatever is in that particular document, you know, is your last will and testament, as long as that's your final, you know, your final document that you do. Very simple, very seamless, getting it admitted to probate. And that is the obviously preferred method that we would like to see all of our, all of our listeners take, is to do a written attested will, because it gives you really the security to know that your wishes are going to be carried out.
It's in black and white on paper.
Black and white on paper. Yeah. And, you know, you have those witnesses, you have that notary. There's no other procedure that you have to go through in order to get that will admitted. So you can begin the administration of your estate very quickly.
It's pretty airtight.
It's in airtight in the sense that, you know, we all know that wills can be challenged. We've talked about that on this program before. But, you know, that is a written attested will, and that's obviously, I'll call it the gold standard.
Okay.
Holographic will. So this is one we do see from time to time at Harvell and Collins. This is one where, hey, I wrote out my will. It's on the back of this napkin over here. You know, we talked about this relative to Aretha Franklin, which I think I'm going to get into relative to our changes that we've made in this statute. So written out entirely in your own handwriting, and it has to be found amongst your valuable effects. We talked about this before. So found amongst where you keep your important papers. And this particular will, as long as it's in your handwriting, signed, or at least has your name written on it in some way, and it's found amongst your valuable papers, then that will can be admitted to probate with three witnesses stating that that is your handwriting.
Ooh, okay.
So you have to have these witnesses, and they have to have affidavits or testimony after your death to come forward in order for a holographic, a handwritten will to be admitted to probate. The change that was made, which is very interesting, they have eliminated under this Senate Bill 197, they've eliminated the requirement that the holographic will be found amongst your valuable papers.
Now it can be anywhere.
So literally it can be anywhere, and it can be, as long as it's in your handwriting and signed by you in some way, that can be your last will and testament. So remember what we talked about before, and I brought up Aretha Franklin because I think it's a very good example to tell you how this law now changes things. We remember that Aretha Franklin died purportedly with no will. They open up her estate as intestate estate. And then lo and behold, what happens?
They found a will.
They start finding three writings.
Here's another one.
One's in the couch. You know, the other one's in the closet. This one's over here,
Drafts.
And here's in her handwriting, and oh yeah, she signed this one. And how I talked about the fact that, you know, under Michigan law, those all three could possibly be her will.
Sure.
Because they didn't have the requirement relative to finding it amongst valuable effects. And, I said in North Carolina, this would be a problem because the key defense, if someone benefited more by intestacy versus having a written will by Aretha Franklin, they could easily challenge that and say, hey,
it wasn't with her.
It was in the couch cushion for the love of God. You know, who keeps their valuable effects there? So it's really interesting the fact that they've taken this out. And we just got notice. It just got signed last week. They kind of sent a little blurb out to us estate planning lawyers and say, hey, by the way, here's a change to this holographic will statute. And I think it's interesting because it really does change the game. Because a lot of times I've had one here recently, a year ago or so. I remember Wes came to my office and said, hey, they found this will and it was in a notebook, you know, and it was just out there on the, table, you know. And then all of a sudden that's a huge issue, was whether is that table where they normally kept their valuable effects?
Yeah.
I mean, that really gets into a fact-intensive, you know, situation where you have to decide whether what did this person historically do and how did they keep their affairs and everything like that. And all of a sudden now, Mike, that is off the table. We literally just want to see, is it a writing? And can we have three witnesses attest that that is the individual's handwriting? And had they signed it or put their name on it in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah. It sounds like that's good legislation. I mean, that don't you think that makes your job easier? And you know, people don't live in an Ozzie and Harriet household. So there could be stuff over here. It could be stuff over there. The fact is they wrote it. You know, and it's in their handwriting. It happens to be on the kitchen table, not back in the filing cabinet where the important documents are. So what?
Yeah.
It sounds good.
I mean, I think that was the intent. You know, that was the intent of the legislation, was to streamline this a bit, and therefore, you know, not have this requirement relative to, the holographic wills. But I do believe that, you know, it is one of those situations, Mike, where just because it's now available to just handwrite your will.
Still keep it with your important stuff.
Just keep it with your important stuff. And don't just write a will for the sake of writing a will, because, hey, now I can do it and I don't have to put it with my important papers and feel like it'll be valid under North Carolina law.
Andrew, let's go over to Emerald Isle, check in with Rick. Rick, you have a question for Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins.
Yes, I got two quick questions. How long should we keep our personal income tax records? And I'm still waiting for my father's 2019, he's deceased, his income tax return.
Yep. So 3 years is a general rule to keep your tax records, but 6 years is probably the advisable way to do it, because there is statute of limitations with 6 years instead of three. And then as far as your father's income tax returns, join the club, unfortunately. I'm waiting for them as well.
Me too.
Several clients that I've got waiting for deceased taxpayers' refunds.
Thanks, Rick. If you have questions for Harvell and Collins and Andrew Foster, call 726-9050.